Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode, we are speaking with Beth McEntee-Pileggi, head of global case and safety data management with Janssen Pharmaceuticals of Johnson & Johnson and co-lead of Transcelerate's Pharmacovigilance Agreements Optimization Initiative.
So prior to her current role with J&J, which she began in 2016, Beth spent 17 years with Pfizer as a senior director overseeing therapeutic areas and global pharmacovigilance operations. She also has 11 years experience as a registered nurse, and Beth obtained her Bachelor's of Science in Nursing from Widener University, as well as an MBA from Wilmington University. So thank you for joining us, Beth.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you again, Beth. So I want to start with your work at Transcelerate. So can you give us background on Transcelerate's PVA optimization?
So the Pharmacovigilance Optimization Initiative was initiated several years back, and it really was taking a focus on how can we look to identify and create some efficiencies when developing pharmacovigilance agreements. And when we talk about pharmacovigilance agreements, for those who may not be familiar with that terminology, pharmacovigilance is an obligation companies have as marketing authorization holders to ensure that they meet their reporting obligations within health authorities globally. And a pharmacovigilance agreement, similar to a contract, actually details out the responsibilities of each party and activities required in order for both of those partners to be able to meet their obligations globally.
Now, just to follow on that, how many people are on the work stream?
So we're very fortunate. Within Transcelerate, we have, I believe, 20 member companies. And across those 20 member companies, we have representation from 15 of the 20. And our work stream is actually comprised of 36 participants. So as you can imagine, it's a space that creates a lot of excitement and a lot of passion. And so we're very fortunate to have so much participation and engagement with this initiative.
So when I looked on the Transcelerate PVA work stream, I saw a lot of documents, a very long one that looked very thorough, which of course I'm sure safety and pharmacovigilance needs. And it said for 2023 that your goals, I think, are to provide a benchmarks for PVA exchange timelines, aggregated benchmarking data of exchange timelines in member companies' PVAs. So does that mean your members are evaluating their processes, or could you explain that goal?
I can actually. So maybe I can take a step back. When we first formed this PVAO work stream, we developed areas of focus, and there were five specific areas that we're currently working on. The one is around defining from a process map perspective. And what that does is from the time of first having an agreement that is signed between two companies, that there is a process map, and that provides some interactive tools from the time of signing through to the point when an agreement ends. And that is to maintain that PVA process from end to end. The other initiative was around creating a glossary. And so the glossary provides a listing of some key definitions and synonyms that are often part of that agreement, specifically around pharmacovigilance. The other tool that we focused on was creating a table of contents. And that really does provide a framework within an agreement. It provides some headings, points to consider, and references that can be leveraged when creating and negotiating an agreement. And then the topic that you mentioned was around the safety data exchange timelines. And when we think about a pharmacovigilance agreement, it's really detailing out those requirements as well as the information that is exchanged between the parties, and it details the processes and obligations. Oftentimes, creating that and negotiating the timelines has to be incorporated into that pharmacovigilance agreement, which can also be referred to as a safety data exchange agreement. And what we wanted to do was, with this exercise, was create a benchmarking survey And what that did, it allowed us to collect data on the type of information that is collected, as well as the timelines for exchange. And the intent for that, so as you asked, so what were we hoping to get from that? It was really so that we could bring more transparency and some insight into the exchange of that information across organizations. And it would help them by providing more of that transparency that companies, by reviewing that and considering not only what's happening across industry with other companies, right? Because it is aggregated data, but then they could look at their own internal organization and think about their systems and processes, as well as what timelines they're frequently negotiating, and really reflect on whether or not they have opportunities within their processes, as well as potentially opportunities with how they approach negotiations with establishing these PVAs, and really with the intent to provide more of that transparency and insight to allow companies to come better prepared to that process and hopefully improve the efficiency of really negotiating and getting to that end state of establishing that agreement between the parties.
Great. Thank you, Beth. Now, on to the next question. What got you into pharmaceuticals, and then what ultimately made you stay?
That's interesting. I'm always fascinated by people's journeys. How did they end up getting into industry? As you mentioned earlier with the introduction, I'm a nurse by training, and I did work in a large hospital here in the States. It was a trauma center, and I was there for approximately 11 years. And I first was introduced to drug safety, as it was referred to back at that time, more commonly. And it was a nurse who was getting her master's. She was providing some shadowing in the emergency room, and she was shadowing me, and I was in the trauma bays. And we had spent quite a bit of time together. I ended up meeting her in a more social setting much later. And through the conversation, I realized that this was a nurse that had followed me in the emergency room. And we started talking, and she started sharing what she did within drug safety. And it really sounded interesting, and they needed help. And so I thought, well, this is something new to try. And so I was doing that part-time, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And even though I was accustomed to that fast pace and working in the emergency room, it was my first introduction. I found it fascinating to try and understand and to really investigate and evaluate and really understand what was going on when we were looking at adverse events within drug safety and what was transpiring with that patient and what was potentially causing it. Was it something related to the drug? Was it something related to their history or other medications they were taking? And I was really fascinated not only by that evaluation process, which aligned pretty closely with working in the emergency room and evaluating patients clinically directly, but I also found the regulations quite interesting and how to proceduralize that and really bring that full circle. And so that was my first introduction. That's how I first came into industry. But I think what kept me in this space was it's constantly evolving area. It's a space where as a nurse, I still feel that the training that I had received and the ability to still impact my patients, it really does provide that opportunity, but on a very broad and global scale. So I think that's one of the reasons why I've stayed in not only in industry, but within pharmacovigilance and drug safety, because I still feel like I'm so close to my patients, even if I'm not providing that direct patient care.
So that's interesting, Beth. The next question was, how has the role of pharmacovigilance changed? But I want to go back to what you were just saying, because as you were speaking and how obviously dedicated and how fascinated you are by what you do right now, and you also had mentioned that in your work stream, it's a passionate group of individuals. So where does that passion come from? I guess you answered it. Everybody in the work stream is all passionate. You're all dedicated.
They really are. As I mentioned, we're really fortunate. So as we were talking about, when you think about having 36 participants, if we were to take all of those individuals and their experience within this space and add it up, it would be just mind-boggling. I have to say, there's a broad breadth of expertise. We have individuals who have worked at health authorities in other countries, globally, multiple different pharmaceutical companies, whether that be small, medium, all the way up to large. It's a great representation across the different work streams. And most of them have had various roles within pharmacovigilance. And I think a lot of the passion that comes through these groups and looking at, you know, how do we make this a better process, right? And so when we think about establishing these pharmacovigilance agreements, we have to think about, well, what happens if we don't have them in place? You know, these different business relationships and the responsibility around the PV system resides with the company, right? And so that is a company obligation. It's with health authority obligations. But for the people who are in this space, often for them, it's very much about the patient. So it's around looking at how do we provide the most transparent information that we know to healthcare providers, to patients, so that they can make better decisions around the benefit risk and whether a product is a good fit for them, and ensuring that we're protecting the safety of our patients. And as a result of that, if we think about if we don't have these agreements in place, it's not just about the fact that, you know, potentially we could have compliance challenges, we could have inspection findings with not having a PVA in place or a delay in getting a PVA in place, but it also can result in delays in our clinical trial starts. It can result in delays in a product launch or an asset transfer. But ultimately, it potentially delays patients getting access to the medicinal products, and it also can result in not having that information available in a way so that patients and physicians and healthcare providers are making the best possible decision for that patient in that moment in time based on their specific needs. And that's why I think this space and individuals contributing to this work stream are so passionate about it. And they want to make it a more efficient process. And by thinking of how can we as an industry, if we're doing these relationships and if we're entering into these partnerships, how do you build that partnership in a quicker fashion? How do you align on what's needed across both parties? And thinking about what can we establish that would be available across the industry? And I don't think I mentioned this, but within Transcelerate, the tools that we're developing, these are available on the Transcelerate website. And you don't have to be a member to leverage them. They are available to anyone within industry. And the intent was, if we could provide tools that companies can access, and if you're going into a negotiation process, to be able to have this third-party structure, tools that are available that can be used through the process, and it's not about what one party is looking for over the other, but being an independent. It was created based off of the regulations, created based off the requirements. It helps to make that negotiation process more efficient, right? It's a starting place, and it allows some flexibility to each of those relationships and partnerships based on what the relationship is, whether it's a co-marketing, co-development, whatever that specific agreement is, that they can pick and choose from these tools and hopefully come together as true partners and to be able to establish these PVAs so that we can move forward quicker and be able to do what we need to for our patients.
That's a really good observation about Transcelerate, having those tools and frameworks that anyone can access and have that laid out as a guide, you know, for everyone to be able to use and, you know, kind of help with those timelines, you know, not reinventing the wheel every time. So I appreciate that. A well-deserved plug for Transcelerate. And, you know, helping the patients help get, you know, those therapies into the market. So you had said pharmacovigilance used to be drug safety. So how else has that role changed?
You know, it's interesting you say that is, how has it changed? I think that when I first joined industry, we were often focused around drug safety. It was very much around what's the safety of the drug? What do we know about that drug? Pharmacovigilance takes more of that holistic look, right? And so when we think about that in general, it's how does that fit into that space? So I think you had asked earlier how has the role of pharmacovigilance changed? So going from drug safety to even pharmacovigilance as a term, we have to think about this. And to answer that question, really, how has the landscape changed? You know, when we think about not just internally, but also externally, we're in an environment now where there's increasing regulatory requirements. We have new novel medicinal products that don't just consider that, I'll say that active moiety, that drug compound, but the delivery system, whether there's devices and how they're used in combination with multiple products. We talk about patients who receive cocktails, the innovative clinical trials that companies are going into partnerships, not only to partner on clinical trials, but also on development of products. And this adds layers of complexity. And when we think about pharmacovigilance as compared to drug safety, where it was very much looking at a product and what we knew about that product, now it really looks at it more holistically. And pharmacovigilance brings in these other aspects around managing the risk with our products and understanding that benefit risk profile. It's not just about the benefits, but it's also about the risk. And when we look at risk management, is also thinking about how can we mitigate any potential harm to the patient. And it really has been an evolution over the last, I'll say, you know, 20, 30 years.
So Beth, can you tell me how different safety is? I mean, safety, right? But in the clinical trial space versus commercial, is it different departments? Are you focusing on different things? Is it a different animal?
We have to think about the life cycle of the product. Products that are in a clinical trial, there's a reason why they're in a clinical trial. It's an investigational compound, potentially not yet approved. We can do clinical trials after products are on the market for various reasons, right? So if it's in an investigational compound, then it's being studied in a controlled environment with controlled populations to truly understand how that investigational compound will behave, right? And to be able to progress through the drug development process and ultimately approval within health authorities globally, and then obviously patient access. Once a product is approved, now it's in the market, it's commercially available, it's prescribed, the intention is to prescribe it within that label of what we know of the product, but now you're not limiting the individuals who may receive that. It's not as restrictive as to who can have access to it. It's really based upon the prescribing physician. When we think about that life cycle, there are regulations that are applicable dependent upon whether a compound is investigational. It's not yet approved. There are different regulations once a product is approved. There are different requirements based upon whether or not it is a study report from a trial or whether it just happens to be an adverse event that we hear about spontaneously from a healthcare provider or through a program where it might be solicited. So all those regulations are different. When you ask about the different groups and are they managed by different spaces, it really depends on the pharmaceutical company and depending on how they're structured. But in general, there are research and development groups who are doing that drug development process. What's interesting, and one of the insights that we found when we were looking at our exchange of timelines, is really around, because in clinical trials, there is prescriptive requirements for reporting, meaning you have limited scenarios of how you can use that drug and how you can use that compound. And so what was interesting was we saw less variability in the timelines for exchange. And that is because there are much shorter timelines for reporting to health authorities. As a result, you have very short timelines for exchanging information in order for both parties to meet the obligations. Once a product is on the market and it is available and used within that label, what's basically for that commercial consumption, then the structure and partnerships can vary significantly. And as a result, your obligations globally, there's much more variability. And as a result, that partnership may look quite different. So much of what we do and build into these pharmacovigilance agreements is centered around the nature of the agreement itself and the life cycle of the product and how it's being used and the partnership of how the parties are coming together, what the intent is.
Excellent. So we hear more about technologies to help the PV function. That's because every function now has a solution that you can optimize, have in the cloud, make it do what that does. Is that your experience right now? Are you seeing more technologies come in? And if you are, what are they used for specifically?
There's definitely a greater focus on technology. And the reason for that is because we need to find better ways of receiving, processing, managing, and really evaluating and monitoring that data. I think we've all have found in the, you know, this technology wave of massive amounts of data available out on the internet and just available in systems and databases. And of course, we're balancing that with ensuring we're maintaining privacy and focused on within not just regulatory requirements from a drug development, but also privacy and how data is used. You know, obviously there's a lot of requirements and regulations around that. And we need to think about ensuring we're using data based upon what it's we've been giving access to, right? Approvals from patients and otherwise. So there's massive amounts of data that's available today that didn't exist before. And so companies are facing the challenge of how do we identify the information, the data that's required and relevant to the drug that needs to be evaluated. And to do that with manpower becomes not only cost restrictive, but the timing. It's a very slow process if it requires individuals to read through massive amounts of data and then to put it into some type of a structured format to allow review and signaling and trending and be able to provide that digital power, right? And so there's a big focus and trend on how can we apply that technology on all of these different aspects through the process, from how do you consume the data into your systems, as well as how do you then take that technology to automate the process through to put it into a structured format so that you can meet your reporting obligations to health authorities globally who may have variability in what they require, to actually evaluating the data on an individual level, as well as in aggregate and looking for signals and trends and recognizing that the power of computing is so much quicker, more refined, can detect differences and nuances that a human may not be able to identify. And to be able to leverage it, not to replace that assessment as much as complement it and be able to provide those tools and present the data in such a way that it can be evaluated medically and understood in context with the product. So there's definitely a big focus in that space. I think that what I'm finding, and I think maybe colleagues and from a personal perspective, is that how do we apply that and really focus the resources in the right places that'll provide the biggest impact? And we're also working within specific regulations. So it has to be very precise. And as a result, there is a structured approach in how you do that and ensuring that we're applying it in a responsible but also a cautionary way, so that we're ensuring that we don't have less effectiveness as compared to maybe a traditional process where it's an individual who's applying those activities. I think one of the things that's interesting is that when you think about computing and you think about technology and the artificial intelligence and machine learning, is that it's the individuals and humans who are providing that information that trains that model, that builds those tools to present the data. And there's a lot of work and focus going around how do we ensure we have the right quality controls and systems in that system and process to ensure that we're getting the benefit and the accuracy of that information. And so it's really an evolving space, I would say. I think that maybe compared to some other industries, We may not be in the same place as, say, banking as an example, or some other industries where we're seeing a lot of automation being applied. I think, you know, we're talking about patients and the health of patients. So obviously there's, you know, a much more focus in ensuring that we do it in a very controlled way, because it's not just numbers and data. There's people behind that data, and we want to make sure we're getting what we need to and meeting all those obligations. And in the end, like I said, it's all about protecting our patients.
No, that's absolutely right. And I've heard that, you know, people compare this industry and our technologies, the slow and how much further ahead banking is. But you're, I mean, you're dealing with data, but there's the data comes from patients, and we people are just complex, you know, we're way more complex than money, you know? So.
Exactly. This is not a transaction, and we definitely do not look at it as a transaction. You know, it's, we're very protective of our patients. And so there's people behind that data, and we never want to forget that. That's why we're all here. And that's why you hear and see and feel the passion that you do in this space.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Beth. Thanks for being on our podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's an exciting topic, and we really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share some of the great work that the teams have been doing, and really want to make sure that it's a, you know, people are aware of it and get access to it, right? So that they can also get some benefit from it as well. And, you know, we hope to continue the journey and, you know, spread the word and get more people involved. It's a great space to be. So thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you so much, Beth. Appreciate it.